Good morning, everyone. My name is Tom Peer. I am the chair of the California Boating and Waterways Commission, and I welcome you this morning. I hereby call to order the August 7th, 2025 commission meeting. This meeting is being held at the Humboldt Bay Aquatic Center in Eureka, California, as well as virtually on Zoom. Constituents who cannot be here in person can participate on Zoom, and instructions on how to participate virtually will be provided shortly. As a reminder to everyone, this meeting is live webcast and can be viewed at www.cal-span.org. The archived video will also be available at the calspan.org website. Before we get started with today's agenda, please stand, if you are able, for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, with liberty, justice for all. All right. That goes back to grade school. Sorry. All right. Let's, if we could, Madam Clerk, could we please have a roll call?
Great. Thank you, Chair Peer. I see that Commissioner Hawkins is participating virtually. For the record, Commissioner Hawkins, is there anyone in the room with you that is over 18?
There is no one in the room with me.
As a reminder, your camera must be on at all times unless the video affects the quality of the internet connection. I'll mark you present. Continuing with the roll call, Tom Peer, Chair from San Francisco.
Present.
Jose Gonzalez, Vice Chair from Sacramento.
Present.
Maggie Hallahan, Commissioner from San Francisco.
Present.
Maricela Rosales, Commissioner from Crestline.
Present.
Gonzalo Medina, Commissioner from Long Beach.
Present.
Hampus Idsader, Commissioner from Thousand Oaks.
Present.
There are seven commissioners in attendance. A quorum is present. Chair Peer?
Pardon me. Will the clerk please now read the instructions regarding public comments on the agenda and non-agenda items via Zoom?
Thank you, Chair Peer. Now, here's the outline of the procedures for public involvement in today's Boating and Waterways Commission meeting. For those attending in person, to provide comments on agenda items, please complete a green public comment form. For non-agenda items, please complete a blue form. Both forms are available at the back table. Once completed, please return them to me. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to comment. We'll hear in-person comments first, followed by those joining us on Zoom. For virtual attendees, we are live streaming and archiving the meeting at cal-span.org. However, we can only accept public comments through Zoom. To register, web search Parks Public Notice and select the Zoom link in this meeting's description. Upon registering, you will be emailed login information and a phone-in option. To provide a comment via Zoom, use the raise hand feature by clicking the participants button, then raised hand. When your name is called, I will enable you to unmute yourself and give your comment. If you're on the phone, press *9 to raise your hand. We'll identify you by the last 3 digits of your phone number and then prompt you to press *6 to unmute. Please note, virtual commenters will not appear on video. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call our support team at 805-215-9496 or email it@agpvideo.com for assistance. Thank you.
Okay, at this time, I would like to introduce local dignitaries that have responded. Nora Mounts, I would presume, who is a district representative for Senate President Pro Tempore Mike McGuire. Natalie Arroyo, who is a supervisor for the County of Humboldt. Jeff Ramey, the Community Services Deputy Director for the City of Eureka. Alex Stillman, who is a council member for the City of Arcata. And Meredith Matthews, who is also a council member for the City of Arcata. And we'd like to welcome you to the meeting. Do any of you have some brief comments?
How's that? Great. Hi, everybody. Nice to see everybody in person. Really glad this is happening in Humboldt County, and looking forward to hearing an update on projects. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Remotely? Another.
Good morning. Jeff Ramey, Deputy Director for the Community Services for the City of Eureka. Good morning, and we're just really excited to be here and host you guys, and we are always, we're looking forward to potentially the refunding of our Samoa Launch project, rehabilitation project, which is right down the street, which is some much needed infrastructure upgrades. And we had gone through the process already of the design and the construction documents, so we're at the shovel ready portion, and we're hoping to get consideration for refunding. Thank you.
Thank you. Any others? Nothing heard. I'd now like to introduce State Parks DW staff, and that would be the Deputy Director, Ramona Fernandez, Division of Boating and Waterways, Catherine Tobias, Senior Legal Counsel, and Johnny Brannon, who is the Budget Chief. So we're going to move on to agenda item number 4, which is the Chair's report, and that would be me. So I'll just launch into it. I wanted to start on something of a somber note. As everyone in this room knows, one of the primary missions of Division of Boating and Waterways is providing safety for the boating public. And we do this through education, and we do this through matters such as the boaters card and so forth. And so I just wanted to take a moment to reflect on the really horrible tragedy that transpired on June 21st in Lake Tahoe. And for those who are unfamiliar with it, 8 boaters, fellow boaters, perished in a single incident on Lake Tahoe. And it's tragic not only for the loss of life, but also for how easily the tragedy could have been prevented. And I'm going to briefly tell everyone the facts of the case. I took the time to read the National Transportation Safety Board report or preliminary report on the matter, and I'd just like to share a couple of facts with you. And when I say that this is a totally avoidable tragedy, you can't always account for everything having to do with water and oceans and waterways and so forth, but the vessel was a 28-foot Chris Craft. And it was valued at about $400,000. So this was not a well-founded boat. It was, you know, a modern boat. There were a total of 10 passengers on the vessel, and they had left Tahoe City, which is in the northern part of the lake, and they were just kind of out for a picnic lunch. They went down to Emerald Bay, which is, I believe, about 10 miles south of Tahoe City. And they pulled in there and stayed for about an hour and a half or so forth. And they felt that the wind was just beginning to pick up. And so they decided to make a decision to go back to the marina from which they had launched. And within the span of 2 hours, they went from a completely sunny, windless day to a almost horrific picture if you're on a 28-foot boat with 8-foot waves, on an open boat. And so that part of the tragedy was unavoidable. What was avoidable, and I, you know, never speak ill of the dead, but apparently they had more than ample safety equipment on the vessel. And when the boat initially began to capsize, it was overtaken by a very large wave and took on a lot of water. One of the surviving passengers distributed life jackets to everyone on the boat. And for whatever reason, he was the only person to put one on. And the other passengers that perished in the tragedy declined to do it for whatever reason. You know, no one really know. This is the sole two survivors gave their witness accounts of what happened. And even more tragic, not only did he distribute all the life jackets, there were a lot of life jackets that remained on the boat that were still packaged and just simply didn't get out of lockers in time. So it's kind of a lesson in what we do here at Boating and Waterways is really trying to educate people. And if, you know, some of these were inflatable, so they're very low. They're not the big, you know, Navy, you know, what do they call them? James Manfield life jackets. These are like very compact, very modern life jackets. And so just to commend the work of this division in trying to educate the public on these matters. I mean, it's obviously just more work to be done is what I will say. So in light of all that, I'd just like to have a brief moment of silence in consideration of the people who died there. Okay, that said, and moving on to more cheery matters, I did spend some time meeting in the past month or so with not only my fellow commissioners, either in person or on the phone or what have you, but also with some members of the so-called stakeholders who represent really the boating community in California. And those were the Residential Boaters of California, the Marine Recreation Association, and also the National Marine Manufacturers Association. And they expressed to me that they really want to remain engaged in the process of the division. And I'll speak to this matter later when we set agenda items, but for everyone's edification, in 1922, we engaged a process with all stakeholders in the state of California in the form of three subcommittees to allow stakeholders and the general public to give input into what their thoughts this commission can do. And Commissioner Hawkins was there with me, and our former president of the commission, Ken Ehrman, also produced reports on these matters. And these range from just a whole host of things, from alternative funding sources, the possibility of an economic impact report, beach erosion control that this division funds, invasive species, the surrendered and abandoned vessels, and so forth. And so it was a very engaging conversation. They definitely want to remain engaged with the commission and the division in order to sort of in the hopes that we can move some of these recommendations forward. So I'll be agendizing that matter at the end of the meeting when appropriate. So with that, we'll move on to agenda number 5, which is commissioner activities updates. And I will start with Commissioner Gonzalez.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning to everybody present, members of the public, special guest staff, and online. Just a few quick brief things. One of them is I had the opportunity to participate in the division's podcast that's kind of co-sponsored with the commission, so that was enjoyable. And to stress that point at the end, we just keep hitting home that message that wear your personal flotation device or call it a life jacket, whatever it is. It's just one of the simplest, most powerful things that we can do, which doesn't seem like at the time until we need it. So just kind of reiterate that message as well. And then, again, as usual, appreciation for everybody that hosted us yesterday for all the site visits. The site visits for me, I'm always bummed when I miss one for just scheduling reasons, but always appreciate all the time, the energy, the care, the attention, the information that's gathered by staff to both host us, not just park staff, of course, but all of the site visit staff that we visit. They really continue to provide a very valuable layer, not just of information, but kind of like really grounding what the project is on and providing just that additional context that, just sometimes isn't always on the page. So just thank you. Know that those are appreciated, as well as to the staff that have to get us there. So on that note, the final piece is I'm excited to be here. I didn't grow up in this area, but it holds a very special place in kind of my childhood, I guess I can put it that way. I love redwoods, and so this was always one of the areas that I could never, like, I was always excited to come up here. So weather permitting, as we can tell. So with that, thank you, Chair. I yield.
And thank you, Vice Chair. I failed to admit your or state your designation earlier, Vice Chair Gonzalez. So let's move on in order of seniority. Chairman Commissioner Hawkins, do you have anything, any comments or reports?
Thank you, Chair. No, I just apologize that I'm not there in person. I had some work conflicts, and so I'm happy to join virtually. To underscore what Chair and Vice Chair mentioned is really serving and bolstering the mission of the division, which is safety and making sure that California's boating waterways are safe and welcoming. And so very excited to continue this work, but also look for more opportunities for community engagement, education, and working with staff on this. So again, sorry I can't be there, but I'm really looking forward to this meeting. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Hawkins. Let's move on. We'll just do it alphabetically. Maggie, Commissioner Hallahan, do you have a report?
Thank you, Chair Peer. Thank you, everyone, for being here. I would like to make a special call out for Mike McGuire, pro tem, for the senator's office. I know he and his office worked very hard to they're part of the process of the Senate confirmation for California Boating and Waterway Commissioners, and the office was worked hard and did a really quick job to help us fill out and make a great commission. So please tell him thank you from all of us and having you here today. It's quite a large district that he has. And I grew up in this area in Sonoma and came up here as a youth. So it's been really wonderful to do the tour yesterday. I want to share that on our last meeting, it had taken a couple meetings to do this, but director, Ramona Fernandez, was able to get a maritime sheriff in to speak about BUIs, drinking and driving, a boat. And we had a great, if you can go back to that last video, it's at about 2 hours into the meeting, which I actually copied it and clipped it and sent it out to several people about drinking and driving and how the police officer had done a deep dive about how it's deferred. When the tickets are given, especially in the Delta, where there's a lot of boating accidents because of drinking and driving, that within 2 years they can have it completely taken off of the record of the driver. It's a great video because he did a very deep dive and explained it. And I shared it with a few people, people who work in yachting, and, you know, and two of them didn't even believe that happens. Like, they couldn't believe it, even though it came out in, like, a public forum. So I'm very interested in finding out what the actual oversight is for California Boating and Waterways. Like, are we part of the safety oversight in California to make sure that you can't defer out of that it goes to full conviction instead of in 2 years they rearrest the same drivers and then re-release it again. And it's all in that great recording that's from the last meeting, and I really urge people to look at it and find out if it's part of the oversight of safety for California. And I'm a real safety nut as a licensed boat captain, and I teach boating, and I teach youth boating, so I'm all about safety all the time. And I'm also about things like emergency services and appreciation of all the maritime emergency people that work for us, how hard it is and how the rescues are, and sometimes the situations of the rescues are really hard on them physically and emotionally. And I don't think that we should add on to that burden the lack of gas and diesel fuel for them to fuel up to do their rescues. And I really would like to, I've talked to a lot of emergency service responders, and that's also a very big issue. So I'd like to talk about that more in the future. So anyway, thank you everyone for being here and working towards a safer waterways in California.
Thank you, Commissioner Hallahan. We'll turn next, again alphabetically, to Commissioner Idsater. Did I do that right?
That pronunciation was perfect. Thank you for that, Chairman Peer. So I want to start on a serious note as well. Actually, I've got two serious topics and somber topics, to borrow a word from our chairman, to report on today. My region, as I think most of you know by now, is Ventura County and LA County, and the boating communities there. Of course, our communities are still rebuilding from the LA fires. That work is still ongoing. And I just wanted to pay special respect to all the people that I meet, you know, on my day-to-day, week-to-week basis, who are really pouring their heart and soul into rebuilding these communities that have been, in some cases, completely devastated by the wildfires we had in LA earlier this year. I also wanted to report, though, on some really encouraging progress on boating safety in my region. So since our last meeting, we've seen several developments that I wanted to bring to your attention. In Oxnard, back on May 17th, we had the 15th annual Safe Boating Expo with local law enforcement and the local boating communities in attendance. It was a really well-executed event, demonstrating and showcasing anything from life jacket fittings to rescue operations. And I think those are the kind of events that bring boating safety to life, right, and allow the community to engage with it in a more positive and interactive way than is often the case. In Santa Barbara Harbor, we've seen a new life jacket loaner station that's opened by the boat ramp. And I think these are the kind of local initiatives that are a reflection, I believe, of the excellent work that the Division of Boating and Waterways and our commission is doing on boating safety.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Idsater, for your report. And we'll now move on to Commissioner Medina. Do you have something to share today?
Thank you, Chair Peer, and good morning, everyone. I just want to take a moment to really give a shout-out to the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services. As you all are aware, July 29th, we had an 8.8 off Russia. And throughout California, every coastal community, certainly down in L.A. County, we were implementing our internal advisory policies, and we were up all night, around the clock, really waiting on those calls with the California Cal OES. And on those calls, we were certainly concerned, but we could hear it in the voices from our sister cities up north. They definitely had some trepidation in their voices. We were still trying to get information on how, when the impact was going to be and how big it was going to be. Certainly Crescent City, always vulnerable, took a good hit. I think they're a model of how cities or harbors should be planning for tsunamis with HDOC. And HDOC certainly mitigated a lot of the potential damage that could have happened to property and boats in the harbor. And we can learn a lot from what happened. It took the brunt of the impact around 2:40 in the morning, but we can learn a lot from what's happening in Crescent City. So kudos to them for leading the way in how we address tsunamis. And there was still significant debris and sediment in the harbor that they're going to have to mitigate. But the Cal OES was just great. And, you know, for the next 24, 48 hours, we were on the phone all night with them. So just wanted to give a shout out to them. That's all I have to chirp here.
Okay, thank you for that, Commissioner Medina. And last but, of course, not least, Commissioner Rosales.
Thank you, Chair Pierre. Good morning, everyone. I appreciate all of you being here. I apologize, I'm not a morning person. Sleeping in a hotel room is kind of rough for me sometimes, so I apologize. I just want to appreciate the work and the coordination that the Boating and Waterways Division has done since I've started in January, just planning and coordinating in the site visits, providing context, going to sites to help all of us understand what it takes to work on projects, approve projects, look at the landscape, the needs, and the access that we need for boater safety and boater access. So just thank you so much for yesterday's trip. I do plan to going back to these places and visiting myself. I have my paddleboard in my car, actually, and I drove myself here, so it gives me opportunity to visit some of these places and go back. Just wanted to share where I live in Crestline, California. A few months ago, we did have a fire near a state park, Silverwood Lake, that actually stopped the access for boaters to go to the campground from both sides, from Crestline and down the 15. So I just want to pay respects to the wildfire folks who coordinated from the county and the state to really make sure that the fire didn't move up the mountain and impact our communities and our waterways. And so because of the road closures, folks are not coming in the opposite direction to Crestline and using our waterways to paddle and kayak. So there's a silver lining there that people still want to come up and recreate and use our waterways. And more work, you know, needs to be done to educate the community about access and boat safety up there. So my goal is to actually create a paddle club with the youth there, preteens and teens. Many mountain communities up there don't have a lot of activities for youth, so that's one of my goals, to work with Lake Gregorico, who works with San Bernardino Parks and Rec. So that's something that I aspire to do. And then I also had an opportunity to talk to you, Ramona, and staff about the Golden Mussel, how I can help in a way that digitally educates many of the communities in the mountain, as well down in the desert and inland waterways, given that the Golden Mussel does not impact Southern California, you know, quagga and zebra does. So just finding that balance between disseminating this information through digital platforms as well as through conservation channels that I'm connected with so that they are aware, they can talk to their elected officials about the impacts that recreationalists will somehow cross paths with. So that way we reduce the impacts of invasive species. All that said, I appreciate you all being here, and I yield.
Thank you, Commissioner Rosales, for that report. And I would also just like to thank the commission generally for their commitment and hard work to promote boating here in California. And I think you've heard from all of the commissioners their real engagement in this subject matter. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about me, but I'll talk about my fellow commissioners. They bring a vast amount of knowledge to this subject matter. And so, you know, I commend all of you for the hard work and commitment you have to the work of this commission and to the division. Okay, so we move on now to item number six, which is the deputy director's report. And so I will turn it over at this juncture to Deputy Director Ramona Fernandez.
Thank you, Chair Peer. And again, thank you all, the commission, for being here with us and the support that you provide to the division. We appreciate all of you and your knowledge. I'm waiting for a presentation to come up. Here we go. So next slide, please. I think at the last commission meeting, I updated you all on where we are in terms of regulations. As you all know, we were in noncompliance with some federal law, with state law, regarding some of our regulations. So we have completed alignment with some of those regulations. We are still in the process of going through the rulemaking package for the fire equipment update. So I'll continue to update you all on those regulations and as we move through that process. Up next slide, please. I wanted to also to provide you all with an update of where we are with the state registration numbers. This is as of June of 2025. We do receive this information from, as you know, Department of Motor Vehicle provides vessel registration on behalf of us. So these are our numbers as of June, a little over 600,000 registered boaters. And that does not include documented vessels that register through the U.S. Coast Guard. So I just want to make that clear. Next slide, please. You all should also have a copy of this, so if you need that reference later, this is also will be available on the website, the commission's website. Federal funds. So I wanted to update you all on, as you all know, that this, we've received several pots of federal funding through the various federal agencies. So we do continue to receive funding for the Clean Vessel Act and the boating infrastructure grants, which we call BIG, and also the Department of Interior, who is partners with the Fish and Wildlife Service. So those grants have continued with no additional requirements. The Recreational Boating Safety Grant, however, was recently, we recently had new regulations that were attached to this grant with the Department of Homeland Security. And so we had a pause in receiving those funds. And those funds, as you may recall, provides our law enforcement training, provides our safety media campaign, law enforcement equipment grants to local law enforcement agencies, as well as I think that might be it, programs. So we had a short pause on those programs. So I'm happy to report that we have signed the 2025 funds moving forward. So we'll continue to resume those programs. We will see what 2025 grant cycle looks like in terms of those requirements. The U.S. Coast Guard did put a pause on requiring states to adhere to the terms and conditions from the Homeland Security. So I'll continue to update you on where we are with that when we get the 2026 grant application. Next slide, please. Also wanted to update the commission on Golden Mussel. As you know, the division and State Parks serves as a partner with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, who is the lead agency on the efforts of the Golden Mussel. We continue to be part of steering committees. The division leads efforts on outreach and education to boaters. So we have continued to meet on a multi-agencies on coming up with ways to educate out. We worked on RAC cards. There's press releases, speaking engagements that we've done. We've done podcasts, and we are also developing signage and boater handouts. All of these publications are offered in both English and Spanish, and on the screen there is where you can request this information. We're also looking at providing signage to the Delta area, which is the areas of the water body that is infected with the golden mussel. And next slide, please. Also wanted to update you on the sticker. So the DMV is now selling the blue mussel sticker in advance of the red one, which will expire at the end of this year. The blue sticker will expire on 12/31 of 2027. And the sticker colors align with the color of the vessel registration, your vessel registration tag for boaters. As you all know, the sale of the sticker provides funding for the Quagga and Zebra grant program. Next slide, please. Also wanted to update you on the California boater card. So this graph represents a number of boater cards issued in 2024 versus 2025. So we have consistently observed a more than twofold increase in the number of cards issued compared to the same period last year. To date, we have issued approximately a little over 400,000 California boater cards. And that completes my update on the division. The division continues to provide programming. You'll hear next from our department's budget officer on our fund condition of the Harbors and Watercraft. Thank you, Chair.
And thank you, Deputy Director. So I think at this, we do public comment. Public comment, and then we're going to have commissioners pose questions. So, Madam Clerk, do we have any public comments on the Deputy Director's report?
As a reminder for virtual participants, please use the participant button to use the raise hand feature. If you're calling by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. I have no green comment cards on this agenda. And I do not see any raised hands on Zoom, either virtually or by phone.
Okay. Nothing heard for public comment on the matter. I'll pass it over to Commissioner Hallahan, who apparently has some questions.
Thank you so much for that report. That was excellent. It was a nice summary of all the work and all the ways in which you go. I have a couple quick questions. I think it's great about getting in line with the Coast Guard's. I know it's hard, and there's probably lots of deeper changes that have to be done in the harbor safety and the codes. Do you know of the 620,000 boats registered in California? What percentage are on trailers? Just getting a sense of what would be moving around that would be, having to have, the stickers and could be moving the golden mussel around. So the percentage about.
I can probably, get you better data, but just off the top of my head, it's probably 80% are trailered for registered boats. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. So like under 30 feet.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then when you were speaking about administrative updates, I heard clearly that the Clean Vessel money is coming through, which is great, and then boating infrastructure grants are coming through, and then Fish and Wildlife big program, so mm-hmm. that's super awesome. I didn't understand when you communicated about a recreational boating and safety grants that at first they were halted and then they were forwarded. Like, how is that going?
So we received our grant. So we apply for the grant from the U.S. This is funding that we receive from the U.S. Coast Guard administers the grant. And so in 2025, mid-year, new terms and conditions were provided to the states to that we needed to adhere to if we signed the agreement. Several states objected to those. So I would probably say about maybe 20 states. There is a current lawsuit regarding those. So there was a pause on California signing those to it so that we would have to adhere to those terms and conditions. Since then, and since it was mid-year for 2025, the Coast Guard's position was that they would not require the states to adhere to those new terms and conditions and allow the states to use 2025 funds, and this is federal funds, until a final decision was made on requiring those states to adhere to those new terms and conditions. So we paused because of the condition of our Harbors and Watercraft Evolving Fund. We didn't have enough state funds to support those programs, so we paused them for a short time. So I did sign that recently, so we're...
Congratulations. Well,
yes, thank you.
I'm sure that was a lot of long, yes. hard meetings. So yes. Basically, it is forward now.
It is forward now.
And then the marine debris removal grants, I wasn't clear. Did you continue that as well?
So I apologize. I don't think I hit on that. So that is also, those funds are coming from the U.S. Fisheries. NOAA, I think NOAA has those funds. We're still in that process. We anticipated we would receive notification whether we were going to get them or not, but we have heard preliminary that we are still in the running for those, so we still don't know yet, but the funds are available. We're just waiting to hear whether we receive them or not.
That's great, because yeah. from the boating community, everyone's saying we need more of those funds,
yes.
because boats are only made to last so long, and they need to be taken in appropriately, not just left to sink at the bottom of the water. So thank you so much, mm-hmm. and thanks for your great work working with the community. I know PICYA has been in, that's the Northern California Yachting mm-hmm. Group, has been mm-hmm. in close contact and taking all the information that you're putting out. And they're really hard hit in the Delta. The economics impact is not just with trailer boats, but just any kind of boats moving around in the Delta. It's very hard for small businesses. So yeah. Thank you so much for your work on that.
Thank you.
Do any other commissioners have questions for the deputy director? Please.
Thank you, Chair. Deputy director, fellow commissioner kind of asked the question I was getting at, which for recreational boating safety grant, other than that pause, everything else is back on track and in terms of federal funds. And I guess part of that, as you're noting, in terms of operational impact, it was relatively minimal in terms of just pausing programs during that pause?
Yes. So you'll hear more on the next presentation in terms of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, but yeah, on the general state of the state and where our fund is there. So we took additional reductions from the state, our state fund as well. But on the federal level, yes, we are back on track with 2025 funding. So 2026 is yet to be determined with the RBS grant. So we're hopeful that we'll be able to continue with that program in the future.
Thank you. And then just a quick appreciation and comment related to that. on the administrative updates. I always find it helpful, and it's a good reminder, not just for myself, but I hope for members of the public, of the value of the partnership of state and federal funds, as you're noting, comes through, you know, U.S. Coast Guard, it comes through Department of Interior, it comes through NOAA to complement the state funds that offer all these, you know, all the services, not just in terms of programs, but actual, like, direct operational support to the boating community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you, Commissioner Gonzalez and Commissioner Idsader.
Thank you. So I wanted to ask about this muscle fee sticker and the receipts from those muscle fees. Can that funding be used for the Golden Muscle response, or would that require a separate program, and if so, how is it being funded?
So currently, there is no dedicated funding for the Golden Muscle. Right now in statute, Harbors and Nav Code only is funding received for the sticker is for efforts prevention for the Harbors and Nav Code. For Golden, Quagga and Zebra Mussels, yeah. So legislation would need, statute would need to change to include the Golden Muscle for that consideration.
You know, I'm going to, Commissioner Medina, I don't know if you have a question or comments, but I'm going to just follow up on that one really quickly. Are the receipts for the sticker sales, do those go into a separate, we're going to call it a separate pot, and that pot is exclusively used for grants for remediation and prevention and so forth, or do those sticker receipts go into the revolving fund generally and then get kind of reallocated somehow?
So with the state in our, so when the transfer comes in from motor vehicle, it initially comes in one, but when it gets to our department, those fees have a sub-account off of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund.
Okay, so they could just go
just that we track.
To repeat what you're saying, it goes exclusively for the mussel program,
yes,
or the invasive species program. Okay, great. Did anyone else have any questions? Please, Commissioner Hallahan.
Are the funds that are collected from DMV, is there any percentages taken off before it comes in and hits our special fund?
So DMV collects it holistically with registration. So there is a fee, but it isn't identified whether it's Quagga and Zebra. They do it as a whole transfer to the department, if that makes sense, or both registration and the collection of the Quagga and Zebra mussels.
So let's say Californians are spending $100,000 in these tags a year. What percentage do you think goes into the actual fund that we're spending for doing this mitigation? Because you say there's a fee that's taken off at DMV. I'm just kind of wondering, is it 50% by the time it gets into the fund to do the work that we need to do for?
Yeah, I'd have to look into some more data on that to determine what the actual percentage is, because it's not. So DMV doesn't charge us separate for that program as mm-hmm. the department. It does it holistically. So we'd have to kind of look at those numbers and get back to
okay.
you.
Yeah. I'm just interested. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I just had a couple of questions. Well, first of all, I want to commend the division, because I think the response rate on the California Boater Card is really remarkable. I think to get that many people to voluntarily participate in a program of that nature is really exceptional, because it's not a non-zero effort to get the card, right? You got to go through 7 hours of training, as you know, Commissioner Hallahan conducts these seminars where she's educating Sea Scouts and so forth to get the card. So I guess that's a comment. And then my question is what is kind of our targeting? Because you've still got 200,000 people have registered vessels. Do we get a little flyer in the DMV registration renewal that targets people who have boats and register boats but may have not participated yet. Maybe this is a separate subject that will be covered. I don't think it's on the agenda for this meeting, but maybe you can just speak to that briefly. Do we work with DMV to include a flyer in there?
Yes. We have in the past, during renewal cycles, obviously that is pretty costly. So we are going to be, we're in full implementation. As you know, this was an 8-year phase-in program. So everyone now is required. And I think that's why we see the numbers that have, if you look at the graph, I think 1 year, or this last month, it was, I think, like 40 or 50,000 cars. So, yes, huge, huge kudos to the boater card team, because there's, our division is pretty small. And so there's three people that are managing that program and making sure that, their people are validating and getting, applying for the card. So, it's been a lot of work. There's been obviously a lot of customer service emails. It took a little longer this last year, obviously, because there was so many that are now applying to get the card. So we'll be evaluating that over the next year to see, now that we're in full implementation, whether we'll put an insert, again, as you mentioned, Chair Peer, on, our goal obviously is for everyone that owns a boat at least have in their household have a boater card. We recognize also that there's multiple operators in a household. There could be a mom, dad, kids that require to get the card. So, 600 registered boats. When we initiated the program, we anticipated a 1.4% per household. So we hoped that our goal is to ensure that, again, every household is aware and has, a California boater card in their home. So we also do outreach, as you know, through social media, through a media campaign that we'll do, and we'll be looking at that, how we continue with that and with our outreach, and also through partnerships.
Yeah, it's the outliers. It's always the problem. Understood. And then just very briefly, what's in terms of numbers, what kind of grant are we looking for the marine debris removal program, and how does that mesh with our current SAVE program?
So the goal there in that program, if we receive funding for it, will obviously be part of, I think the goal there is dedicated in the Delta. And I'm going to look at Karen, because it'll be under her purview, but it'll be part of the SAVE program, but it would be applied. So the goal would be those agencies that are in the Delta area that would be able to apply for these grant fundings, grant funds. So
what's the number that we're trying to get from the federal government through?
The dollar amount.
Yeah, marine debris removal.
Karen, yeah, I think it was.
Okay, I'm just,
We can, we'll have to get that.
Speaking with my fellow commissioner, sorry.
2.9, 2.5 or something like that. I think it was
2.6 million.
Thank you, Debbie.
2.6 her. Okay, thank you. And the reason I asked is just speaking with my fellow commissioners who are involved really very heavily in the we'll call the marina industry. They both expressed privately to me that this remains a really big problem, and I understand these funds are going to the Delta, which seems wholly appropriate because that's a very trafficked waterway. I guess that's a federal navigable waterways, even though in state territorial waters. But and that's why I asked that question. Yeah. Okay, so enough of me talking. Let's move on. Are there any questions or comments from commissioners? None. So let's now move on to the item number 7, which is the enacted budget update, and we'll be hearing from Budget Chief Johnny Brannon on the 2025/26 enacted budget.
All right, good morning. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect, perfect. Okay. I'll be walking through a high-level overview of DVW's budget for 25-26. Sorry, but I maybe I had a something with audio-visual issues, or when someone came off, so I'm going to miss this, but I'm going to go a little bit out of order. I must have had an outdated version of the deputy director's report, because it was a critical slide that I didn't catch it, or maybe it was omitted, but yeah, I'm going to have to jump around a little bit. I apologize for that. Audio-visual, can you go straight to slide 7, please? All right, perfect. Thank you. All right. Let me jump around this. Sorry, my talking point's a little bit off now. There's a slide that all my slides kind of refer back to this Harbors and Watercraft Sustainability BCP that went through this year. And so I don't know if you guys heard or not from Ramona, but I didn't catch it. So I want to walk through it real quick, just so there's not any outstanding questions or the confusion as I start my presentation. But this past year, we worked with Department of Finance on a Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund Sustainability BCP. Granted, as you guys know, revenues or expenditures greatly outweigh revenues, and without any kind of increased revenue, we have to make cuts to make sure that DBW can find fund solvency through 2026-27. And so as part of this BCP that went through, we took significant reductions across the board. So first off, there was a $3.4 million reduction to boat and safety grants, a $1.75 million transfer to the Abandoned Watercraft Abatement Fund that's being removed for 3 years. We're also taking a $1.5 million cut to state operations. That would be about $750,000 on the DBW side, and then another $750,000 on the state park side for the districts that provide boat and support. There's a $1 million decrease to QZ grants. And then we also worked in about this year, it's going to be $9.3 million transfers. So we're transferring back in $3.3 million from AWOF, and then another $6.3 from Public Beach Restoration Fund. These are previous transfers that are larger transfers from Harbors and HWRF to these funds. And these were grant programs, or dollars left after grant programs or grants were completed. And so these were balances that were sitting in these other funds that were now moving back to Harbors. And so on the slide, you'll see 3.9 from AWOF. That's actually going to be 3.3 million this year, and then another 600,000 next year. So sorry about that. I thought this was going to be touched upon earlier, so I want to go ahead and address this slide now, so that it makes more sense as I work through my presentation. Audio-visual, please take me back to slide 2. Perfect, thank you. All right, DBW's enacted budget. Here you'll see the support level funding that's allocated to DBW. For state operations, there's about $29.8 million allocated. Of that, there's $14.4 million for HWRF. Within that, we're realizing that $750,000 cut that I just talked about from the BCP. So that's why it's a little bit down from prior years. $7.8 million comes from Federal Trust Fund. Another $6.7 million in reimbursement authority. And then $1 million from the vessel operator certification account. On the local assistance side, there's $2.3 million under the boat and facility grants. That includes the $1 million decrease for QZ grants. For our boat and safety grants, we're seeing $8.1 million. That includes a $3.4 million reduction there. And then authority for federal trust funds at $12 million, and then $1 million for abandoned watercraft abatement fund grants, and that includes that $1.75 million reduction, and that's due to the $1.75 million transfer from Harbors that would not be going into that fund. So we had to take the reduction along with that to the grant program. One area I do want to point out, this is more on the budgeting side, is that the vacant position reduction and government efficiency drill reductions from 24-25 are not reflected in this budget. So the legislature and the governor's office agreed that this would be a mid-year drill for this fiscal year. So we'll, once that drill comes out from finance, we'll see those additional reductions sometime during this this fiscal year. All right, next slide, please. All right, here you'll see three-year expenditures. So this slide illustrates all appropriations to DBW. 23-24 reflects actual expenditures as reported on our past year financial statements, while 24-25 and 25-26 are appropriation levels. We won't have, accountant will not have final numbers for 24-25 until sometime in September. As you can see, there's a decrease to state ops and local assistance compared to last year. That's consistent with that BCP I reflected on earlier in this presentation. And then also you'll see the Davis-Dolberg transfer at $10 million, which is consistent from year to year. Next slide, please. All right, here's a look at three-year local assistance. You'll see the breakdown of local assistance appropriations over the past 3 years. Significant changes for this fiscal year would be, you'll find under other, is that $1.75 million reduction to AWOF grants, as well as the reduction to the boat and safety grants under Harbors and Watercraft in the red. And so that number right there shows $2.4 million reduction, not 3.4. The reason that that is a little bit less than what you would anticipate seeing is because we actually had a removal of a reimbursement authority of $1 million that was no longer needed. And so it doesn't really change anything structural to, it's more of a accountant side, you know, funding mechanism, but that's why it's only shown at two. Actually, what does it say? 3.4. I'm sorry, the numbers are off there. 3.4 million reduction to boat and safety grants. Sorry, the slide I'm looking at shows different than what's on the screen. Federal fund authority is consistent at $12 million from the past few years. All right, next slide. All right, three-year revenues and transfers. So as before, actuals are shown for 23-24, 24-25, and 25-26. These are estimates from Department of Finance and is in line with what shows in the galley. To refresh everyone's memory, boat and registration runs on a biannual schedule. So an odd year is going to be a high year, and then the low year would be the even year. Actual total revenue for 23-24 came in at about a little bit over $36 million, while for 24-25 were projected to be right under $24 million, and current year is projected to be a little bit over $37 million based on DOF's projections. You'll notice that the motor vehicle fuel account transfers dipped for 24-25. This was a mid-year change by Department of Finance that we were not projecting, and no one outside of finance really knew about that till it happened. So that was a significant hit to Harbors and DBW, as we're expecting to have a few, $3 million last year and this year. So, you know, that's over these, last year and this year, that's a $6 million swing. That's a large hit that we had not accounted for in prior budget presentations. All right, next slide. All right, DBW's operational expenses and revenues. So the focus of this chart is to illustrate the dynamics between total expenditures outweighing incoming revenues. So the left columns, when you're looking by fiscal year, represent the HWRF expenditures, while the right side illustrates revenue only. So the motor vehicle fuel account revenues and other transfers are not, and other transfers in and out are not included here. The expenditure side also does not include the Davis-Dolberg transfer out, because we see that as an expenditure. So on the left-hand side, in red, you'll see state operations, and that's basically the as I touched on before, the $14 million that goes to DBW, and then about $5 million that goes on the park side to the districts that support Boughton. The next line up is local assistance. And then that top area in white, that is appropriations or support to other departments. And so this kind of relates a little bit back to probably the question earlier to Ramona about the fees that that DMV charges for collecting fees. They don't, the revenue they receive, all the revenue comes directly to us, but how they're paid or their costs are incurred is we give them appropriations, or since the department or and through HWRF gives other departments appropriations to do boat and related support every year. And so the DMV revenues come in, but we actually provide them appropriations to do their job. So of that $17.6 million you're seeing in current year, that's where DMB's fee or cost of doing business is included there. Now on the revenue side, you'll notice that Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund is no longer receiving general fund support by way of those transfers that spanned the past four fiscal years. So the last one, $20.7 million, came in last year. So going this year, we have no more general fund support for HWRF. And so if you see this, on the far right, it kind of represents the dire straits of this fund. You know, that without that general fund support, the expenditures and the cost of doing business is greatly outweighing the revenues that are coming in. Also not illustrated here, but you could find on the galley, is when you take into account all the revenues and transfers for HWRF, the expenditures outweigh revenues by almost $11 million. And this year, revenues, the transfers then include an additional $9.3 million. So, you know, without that, we're looking at about a $20 million swing. All right, next slide. Actually, I maybe go two slides to the end. So that's it for the budget presentation. Are there any questions for me?
Well, I believe that we moved to public comment on the matter before we ask for questions from the commissioners. So do we show any, we don't have any cards?
I don't have any green. Oh, I just
you do
have
now.
A green public comment card. And I know that I have one raised hand over Zoom. So Kate Thompson, we're going to get to you very soon. We now welcome William Hansall for a public comment. You have 3 minutes.
Great. Thank you very much. Good morning. My name is William Hansall. I'm the sheriff here in Humboldt County. I appreciate you guys having the meeting here. It's great. We live in such a beautiful county. Six wild rivers. We have our beautiful 110 miles of coastline, Humboldt Bay. So welcome. We rely on boating waterways funding. We would not have a boating deputy. We would not have the supplies or the equipment if we didn't have this grant. And we're seeing the grant fund slowly depleting over the course of this last several years, though our responsibilities seem to be going up. And so we really want to echo that. I know you are advocates for us. We want to be advocates for you all as well in Sacramento. We have one of our board of supervisors here, Natalie Arroyo. She's in the back. She's also a big advocate for funding, because these are one of the things, especially in the North State Sheriffs, we talked about this just the other day, that though I think funding is tied to how much boating are registered within your counties, I think that's how it's supposed to work. Our responsibilities are great, and we may not have a whole lot of boats actually registered within the county, but people from out of county come here all the time. Salmon fishing here, you know, the fishing, people are coming from multiple counties away, and we're responsible for the boating accidents and the waterways. And you're looking at one, maybe two deputies for all their different responsibilities. And so I'm really, really urging you, instead of looking at reducing the budgets for local rural counties, we want to increase those as much as possible because the responsibilities are great. And we as a county do not have the funding to supply a deputy, supply the boats for this great responsibility that's put upon the sheriffs really in the North State. So I just want to echo that. Again, my name is William Hansel. If I can be a resource for you, please let me know. I'd be more than happy to advocate for you where we can. But again, this is something that we need to pay attention to, and we can't continue to work on a shoestring budget. So thank you.
Yes.
And we have one more public comment for this item.
All right, thank you. Hi, I'm Natalie Arroyo. I'm a county supervisor representing this district that you're in right now. I think the last time that this commission met here was, I believe, in 2018. I was a city council member at the time, so thank you for coming back. It's great to see you all again after the pandemic. I am also a reserve officer in the Coast Guard, but I'm speaking with my county hat on today. I just really appreciate the emphasis on boating and waterways safety in particular because of, you know, filling that role as well. You know, to put a finer point on what Sheriff Hansel said, I want to speak to some of the demographics of our area and stats. We have over 3,500 square miles of land, 400 square miles of water. That doesn't include all of our coastal water that's in the waters of the state. About 145,000 residents, but over 500,000 visitors per year. And, you know, we always have incoming college students and new residents, as many communities do. And we're the 13th largest of California's 58 counties. In a prior life in the nonprofit world, I worked a lot on getting people outdoors and out on the water. I wrote the grant for the I Street Dock that the city of Arcata completed, a DBW-funded grant, thank you, and worked on signs and info for the North Jetty and for what we call water trails all around Humboldt Bay. So really passionate about getting people outside and enjoying the water and boating, especially paddle boating. We do really have wild terrain. Those of you who are able to do the field tour or who are familiar with the area really see that. Cold water, rough conditions that consistently overwhelm both longtime residents and visitors. Of course, we have a lot of visitors who are just new to a place that's as rural as this and just not familiar with the conditions that we have to work with. But then we have lots of people who have lived here their whole lives and just that one day the sneaker wave overwhelms them, or river safety is just not top of mind, or they underestimate the conditions. And, you know, so we have a lot of drownings and near drownings here. We have a water safety coalition that has formed in addition to our harbor safety committee. So one is a little bit more formalized, and one is really starting to take a crack at water safety and drowning issues. And I want to emphasize just how big of a challenge that is for us in our region, from, you know, little kids, an 11-year-old and a 5-year-old this year who were swept off at popular boating and recreation areas and water access points to, big adult men who are swept off and also need to be rescued. So there really isn't one type of person who this happens to, but the conditions where we live really are tough for folks. And so I want to emphasize just how important the response capacity is, as Sheriff Hansel mentioned, and how important it is to have really consistent and clear signage. There is some, but there really, really needs to be more.
Thank you for your comment. Your time is expired.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And moving on to virtual comments, I know that I have two. Kate Thompson, I'm going to allow you to unmute. I see you twice in the meeting, so hopefully, there we go.
Kate Thompson, and can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. Because I'm kind of on two forums here, the phone call and the Zoom. But I'm a recreational boater, and I'm also have a Coast Guard license, 5010 captain license. And it's really a concern to me about several things to do with marinas. But I was just wondering, at your next meeting in San Diego, if some time could be allotted for like a workshop, working with the public, because in my case, I'm concerned about being able to get fuel at the marina in San Francisco. And there,
Ms. Thompson,
some
I'm
rumors
sorry,
about-
Ms. Thompson, I think your comments yes. might be better addressed at matters not on the agenda. Right now, we're just taking public comments on the budget considerations. So,
okay, I'm sorry, I missed the
yep.
first one.
Yeah, I don't mean to cut you off. If you'd like to speak on
the
enacted budget.
There.
That's the item we're okay. addressing now.
Okay. Well, thank you to everybody and all your hard work. And I'm sorry for the budget cuts because it's very serious. And just thank you for all your work. Thank you.
And then we have Jerry Desmond. You have 3 minutes to comment.
Hello. This is Jerry Desmond. Representing Recreational Boaters of California, RBOC, and our group, like many of the boating industry folks, have been participating and are very interested and concerned about the HWRF deficiency. And as we look at the presentation on the fiscal year and the revenues and the expenses, a couple of items that come to our attention. One is that the when we talk about the expenditures and that there's approximately $18 million in transfers from the HWRF to other departments, we think that that is a significant amount of money, and it's worth diving into the details about, in addition to DMV, what other agencies are receiving those funds. It is also interesting to us that since the stakeholder process in 2022 that a number of commissioners and the division and the public engaged in, that the anticipated deficit remains at $20 million per year, which is very significant and also places a tremendous burden on registration fees if that is going to be the sole source of revenues. We do note that the motor vehicle fuel taxes that are attributable to boaters that total over $100 million per year have not been redirected in any fashion back to the HWRF. And we're concerned with the staff reductions and the cuts that have been made without any impact on the anticipated deficit, which remains at $20 million after 3 years. Thank you. And We look forward to our future engagement on the issues. Thank you.
And there are no further public comments on this agenda item.
Okay. Madam Clerk, can the public speaker that I regrettably had to cut off, can she sign up for the general public comment section? Still?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I still have her online.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So at this point now, I will turn to my fellow commissioners about their comments on the budget. And I will turn first to Vice Chair Gonzalez.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two quick questions, which can be fielded to the appropriate staff. On the slide with the three-year expenditures, can you just remind me what the Davis-Dulwich transfer is?
I'll do that. I'm not sure if Johnny's still on, but that is a transfer to the Department of Water Resources, and that was part of the State Water Project for recreational opportunities when the State Water Project was built.
Thank you. And then this came up, I think, in one of the public comments. For the slide with operational expenses and revenues in terms of transfers or reimbursements to other departments, do you know if, in addition to the DMV, what some of the other state agencies or departments may be?
Yeah, I can do that, Ramona. So if we're looking at other departments, there's allocations go out. The DMV, as we talked about, to Fish and Wildlife, and to Food and Ag.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yield.
Any other questions?
Yeah, just a follow-up question on that that point. To what extent would you say that those transfers to other departments are discretionary as opposed to compulsory or set in stone in some way? And it also goes to the question that Mr. Desmond asked earlier.
They're pretty much set in stone. We did an analysis where I worked with finance a couple years ago to get a breakdown of what exactly those expenditures other departments are used for every year. And so we worked with Ramon and we kind of went through that, and there's certain programs that they support. I guess the biggest issue overall is just that, as you guys have seen outside of or everywhere within the state, inflation has been high and the cost of doing business increased greatly over the last, especially the last 5 or 6 years. And so what happens is these expenditures of the departments have been growing in the same manner as inflation has and other, costs, operational costs. So, they're pretty much set in stone. There's really no wiggle room that we know of. We've worked with finance on this. But I think it might go back to a more of a broader view of, about what programs are being supported under harbors and seeing about if there's anywhere we can find efficiencies. Maybe Ramona can speak a little bit more to that as she's been very hands-on with looking into these other programs.
Just on that, it would also be good to understand these relatively large transfers back from AWAF and the Public Beach Restoration Fund.
Mm-hmm.
It appears that there it was possible to return some of that, some of those funds back to DBW. So if you can speak to that, just so we have a complete understanding, that would be much appreciated.
Do you want me to take that, Johnny?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, sure. So as part of this last budget cycle, really our goal was to look at the fund condition and be able to come back over this next several years, 27, 28 fiscal year, to come up with some viable solutions on a sustainability. So the two funds that we looked at, the Public Beach Restoration Fund, was actually funds that had been there either for prior year projects that were just kind of sitting in that fund that we couldn't use. And the same with the Abandoned Watercraft Abatement Fund, were either through the years of a fund balance ending up in those accounts. So in order for us, as we looked holistically and planning for these next several years, we used those funds to basically get us through these next few years on a fund balance so that we can then start planning, which we'll be doing, along with stakeholders on one, revisiting and looking at what things that we didn't implement as part of that engagement process 18 or so months, with last 18 months. Whenever we did 21, 22, all those initiatives that were brought forward during that process, things that weren't brought forward, and then maybe other opportunities where we can bring in revenue. And as Johnny mentioned, one of the things that we have looked at in the past are those larger transfers to other departments, and working with the Department of Finance to see whether those funds are still, how are they being used, and are they being used to support recreational boating programs.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful. Final question from me. Just looking at the revenues and the uneven nature of these charts here, if the fees and licenses are on a biannual schedule, I assume those fees and licenses relate to a 2-year period when they're paid. why would they not be recognized over a two-year period? I suppose in accounting language, you might call that accrual accounting instead of cash accounting. It appears here that you're recognizing the full fees for 2 years when they are paid. So I'm just curious to understand the thinking behind that.
I see what you're getting at. Like, for instance, it would be this year, you know, DMV bills in September. I think that's when the notices go out and it starts coming in October. So we take it as, you know, instead of we have the cash on hand, so we recognize the count during the fiscal year when it comes in. And so even though it's for a two-year operating period, the funds are all received and they're due by, I believe, January 1st, correct me if I'm wrong, Ramona, of the even year. So, you know, it's not like an expenditure. It's more, it's a revenue side. So we are going to account for it in the fiscal year that it comes in, rather than trying to spread it out. I think it'd be a little bit more confusing to take the revenue and have it sit in the bank and, you know, in a bank account and try to spread it out and say, hey, you know, this is for a 2 year period and just spread it out. It would be a lot more work, and it's just not with standard cash basis that we do on the accounting side. We can do that on the expenditure side. If we have accruals, we have an expenditure we know is for the next year, we might accrue that, and that will show in the next year. But, you know, it's due January 1st, and it's the same fiscal year when we take it in, and so that's where we take it into account for that year. So if it actually comes in after January 1st, then it's actually considered late, and then it has other fees. So that'd be another reason not to take the revenue and just spread it out over a two-year period.
Okay. Sounds like that's your accounting policy. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, renewals. Renewal notices normally go out, as Johnny mentioned, around August, September. So this is the big... our big year, I guess, the odd year, and then do, like Johnny mentioned, by the end of the year. But, you know, as we all know, those registrations don't always come in at the same time. So calculating in the revenue as it, you know, trying to put it in at one pot is pretty challenging.
Okay. Commissioner Hallahan, you have some questions?
Yes, thank you so much. I'm very dyslexic, and so numbers have always been crazy, but I've worked within government before, and I know this is so hard because people account for it all very differently. Real quick, Johnny, I didn't catch, what's your last name and your title?
Last name is Brannon, B-R-A-N-N-O-N. And then actually it's up to your, over your right shoulder behind you. I see my name up there.
Yep.
but yeah, my title is budget officer, or budget chief.
And are you full-time with the Department of Boating and Waterways?
Parks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you, this is one of the things you do, is this?
DBW is a small subset of what I oversee. I oversee the full budget for the Department of Parks and Recreation, as well as three conservancies.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. you have to be like in sync with all of that. I'm going to ask you and Ramona a question, and you might not know it. To the officer that spoke earlier, I actually don't understand it. I have asked before, but it's so confusing to me. When the registration fees are coming in, how do we look at the 22 counties of California? Are we distributing some of our funds, prioritizing counties that have more per capita boats, or, you know, how are we exactly doing that? Because usage is clearly different than where people are harboring their boats.
Yeah, so you're probably referring to our financial aid program, and I don't have that formula in front of me, but we do determine, there is a formula that we determine. It is all in statute of how that formula is how each county is determined the amount of funds that they receive once they are approved to be part of the program. And it is a voluntarily program. So counties have to first dedicate their boat tax revenue to be a participant of this grant program. So this grant program doesn't fully support agencies. It's a sub, you know, it assists, our funding assists counties. But we do recognize, you know, the smaller counties that are participants that, you know, that do really rely, as Sheriff mentioned, a lot of the smaller counties definitely rely on that funding to be, to assist with their marine programs.
So just offhand, is Humboldt County one of these counties that's taking the full taxes? Because I guess I'm understanding that there are some taxes that go directly to all the counties.
So all the counties in that program, and Humboldt is one of them, that they do have to, in order to be a participant, they have to dedicate their boat, all their boat tax revenue.
And here in Humboldt, they are doing that.
Yes, yes.
And so they are part of our, what we might say,
financial aid program.
Yeah, because
subvention program.
Because it's not in their favor, because they have more people using than registering here. So they have more action on the waterways, but they don't have so many boats registered. So they have a larger space to cover waterway. So that's fuel and they're obligated. So it's that's great. And that program's not getting cut.
That program was cut this year.
Oh, is that what's happening?
Yes, it was 11.5, and it is currently 8.1, I believe. I think it's 3.5 million cut this year.
Those must be hard decisions. Yeah. Thank you.
Anything further from commissioners? Please.
Thank you. That's. I hope my through line makes sense. Where I was getting at is, you know, referring to the technical term wiggle room. I think one of the things that, and maybe this will, you know, it's a follow-up for like a commission informational or workshop, because I think that some of the questions come up in terms of the budget. What falls under the purview of the commission, right, whether we can make recommendations and like having not just our awareness, but where we can advocate accordingly. And then which ones, to be honest, maybe legislative process might be administrative beyond us or administrative within the division. Because I know often questions come up, well, why don't we just not move this or why don't we just increase that? And I think it would be helpful to always have those reminders to be able to say, like, look, maybe ideally, if the division was doing its own registration, we wouldn't be using the DMV and therefore incur those costs or rely on those processes, which, for example, has come up. I said ideally because you can't just snap your fingers and make that happen, right? And then other things as have been mentioned, which said if a formula is set by statute versus whether it's an administrative option that the division might have. I say this because I know in terms of the revenue, both the need but also the pressure that comes up in those conversations, and I see that not just reflected obviously on the voters that would have to bear that, as well as who it benefits, like our law enforcement on the water that may also have that question. I think those are examples of the conversations that need to happen so it doesn't seem like a one unidirectional type of kind of pressure point. So I'm just putting that in there because I think I found it, that's part of where a lot of questions often come to be able to say, I think we all are aligned to very similar asks, and it's been helpful to understand kind of where we have more wiggle room than not and why.
Noted, thank you.
Anything further? Okay, please. Commissioner Medina.
Thank you, Chair.
Sorry. Names are not my forte.
You know, I want to thank the Deputy Director for everything she's doing to manage the uncertainty right now surrounding federal funding, certainly with how it relates to our funding here, but it's not just us that are being impacted. Many other funds have that kind of uncertainty as well and unique stipulations that make it hard to support. And I do want to thank you for looking into auditing other
funding going out from us to see how it's being used and whether it's being utilized accordingly to how we set it out, and with the mission of boating and education, which we all strongly believe in. And I think the commission feels strongly that boating and education are incredibly important and can't happen with strong safety in mind, right? So boating education and safety, and certainly our, as the sheriff alluded to earlier, it's extremely important that we have safety out in the water, especially with the amount of territory. AI is jumping in on the conversation. But thank you, Sheriff, for your comments and just how important it is to make sure that we, as a commission and as an entity, support the work that, of boating and education, but safety also as well. That's all. Thank you.
Chair Medina, Chair Medina, Commissioner Medina, also I want to thank you and your leadership because of you agencies and as well as the sheriff of allowing your officers to train on our behalf at the state level. And I know you have officers that you send over to the MLATC, the MLETC that we utilize and partner with. So also without your agency's ability to, you know, send officers to train at the state level, our training program couldn't be what it is today. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, anything further from commissioners? Okay, well, in that event, I would like to thank Mr. Brannon for your report and your update. And now we will move on to general public comments on items not on the agenda. And each member of the public will have 3 minutes to make his or her comment. And I think anyone in the room want to make a general public comment? No cards?
I have no blue comment cards.
Okay. And do we have any hands raised?
We did. Kate Thompson was trying to get through. She's having technical difficulties. So as a reminder to the public, if you're having technical difficulties, you can call 805-215-9496. Or email it@agpvideo.com for assistance. So hopefully she's able to rejoin soon. But I do have one more raised hand since that announcement, and it's from Bo Biller. You have 3 minutes to comment. Oh, just 1 second, Bo. There you go.
Mute. All right. Mr. Chairman, members and staff, thanks for having me on the Zoomer here. First, I want to say thank you to the commission and staff for coming over to our California Boating Congress. First, I should identify myself. So I represent the Marine Recreation Association, the California Yacht Brokers Association, and the California Association of Harbor Masters and Port Captains. Collectively with some of the other speakers you had earlier, Jerry Desmond with the RBOC, you may hear from Mark Smith with National Marine Manufacturers Association. We collectively have a group called the BORG. That's the boating organizations in California. We work together to participate in your stakeholder meetings over the last few years. We tend to join together in writing letters on positions and policy that we hope to advocate for before your commission. And collectively, we will also be meeting down at San Diego at the MRA conference in November. Grateful that you also will have your commission meeting down south in San Diego. That was a great conference that we did in Long Beach last year where you had a division meeting there. That was very successful, very well attended. And I'm not going to focus too heavily on policy items. There was some movement that was made in a very positive direction based on a lot of the work done by the commissioners that ran the subcommittees through the, we call those things, the stakeholder groups that met. And, you know, for example, the aquatic, or not the aquatic invasive species, but yeah, so AIS, being able to bill over to those that utilize the services of the division, I think that was a step in the right direction. I know on beach erosion, we finally recognized that having a nexus between what the boater fees are there to do and where those monies went, and I see that they're being transferred, which is great, but we may have some statutory needs and changes on that front. There are some other items that the task force variously came up with that are yet to be realized. I couldn't spend my time here with 40 seconds left without saying we as MRA and the groups I represent, and I think the boating organizations together, believe that if we had a robust economic study of recreational boating in California, it would make not only your jobs easier to understand the vast impact we have in California, but also the legislature and those that think about funding. And clearly, we're in dire straits with the HWRF. So hopefully, we can look to these things down the road. And with 5 seconds to go, I will conclude. And thank you again for all your participation and look forward to it.
Madam Clerk, do we have any, did we catch Ms. Tompkins, was it?
We did not get her back yet, but we do have a raised hand from Mark Smith. I'll allow you to unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Mark Smith, on behalf of the National Marine Manufacturers Association. Appreciate all the comments that Jerry made in an earlier item, and I just wanted to say ditto to what Beau said. So thank you for listening to our concerns. We look forward to continuing to have robust conversations. Thank you very much.
Any further?
No, there are no further public comments at this time. She wasn't able to rejoin.
Okay, Counselor, can I ask you a question? Could we, because we're now scheduled to take a break, if I just want to make sure we hear all public comments, could we hear that after the break?
Certainly.
I just recall the item.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you're communicating with her via email or something, maybe you can just let her know we'll be back in. Well, should we try to get back on schedule and take a shorter break, or what are the preferences of my fellow commissioners? We're scheduled for a 15-minute break, and we're about maybe 10 minutes behind. You want to do the whole 15?
Good with shorts.
10.
Okay, 10 minutes then. So we will reconvene at 10:52. And with that, we'll just take a brief 10-minute break. Okay, well, I'd like to welcome everyone back from our short break. And just to confirm, Madam Clerk has disappeared. Did we Heidi, did we get? Okay, so we're just going to move on to the next item. We're going to continue that one. And if we hear back from the public for public comment, we can return to that item with the blessing of my fellow commissioners. Okay, so we'll now hear from department staff, Joe Dukes, on the division's proposal to provide grant funding for the Fish Lake non-monetized boat launch facility, which I will parenthetically add, all the commissioners had a very enjoyable day up there yesterday, and we appreciate all of you folks being here today to make your case. All right, with that, Joe, please.
Yeah. Good morning, Chairman Peer, Commissioners, Deputy Director Fernandez, Legal Counsel Tobias, and everyone in attendance and on Zoom. My name is Joe Dukes, DBW staff, and I am presenting the U.S. Forest Service's request for a $525,000 Waterways Connection Initiative funding contract to improve non-motorized access to Fish Lake. Here in person to represent the Forest Service, we have Kip Valenzano, Recreation Management Specialist, Blaine Gomez, Civil Engineer, Leroy Sear, District Fish Biologist. We are here to seek the Commission's advice and comment on this proposed project. We are proposing to use the WCI money to fund this project. This funding is from the SB 170 Budget Act in fiscal year 21-22. DPW was allocated $10 million for boat launching facility projects that fit the funding criteria to expand inland waterway-related outdoor access to communities exceeding a population of 2,500 near inland waterways who lack meaningful connections to nature. The proposed project fits this funding criteria and will provide the that opportunity for connection to the town of Hoopa and the inland areas of Humboldt County. Funding must be encumbered by June 30, 2027 and expended by 2029. Fish Lake is in Northern California in Humboldt County. Fish Lake offers camping, fishing, hiking, and boating activities like kayaking and canoeing. The lake is a non-motorized boating-only facility, or lake, sorry. Fish Lake is approximately 60 miles north of the town of Hoopa and approximately 72 miles northeast of the city of Arcata. The commission did visit this facility during yesterday's tour. This is an overhead view of Fish Lake. Access is via the Bluff Creek Trail, starting at the bottom right of the picture. The Forest Service did fund construction of an existing launch ramp in the north end of the lake over 20 years ago. The existing concrete launch ramp is narrow and steep. The ramp is suitable for vehicle trailer launching, but is challenging for hand launching, especially for those with mobility issues. The water surrounding the ramp is infested with the Eurasian milfoil weed and invasive species. The weed is restricted to the north end of the lake because of the shallow water and topography of the lake. Boaters launching at the ramp need to navigate through a thick patch of the invasive weed to access the day use area. The small parking area near the launch ramp can only accommodate approximately 6 vehicle trailers. This limits the use for access for car tarp and hand launch vessels. The Forest Service conducts a annual hand clearing of the weed. Boaters typically avoid the northern part of the lake and generally prefers to recreate near the day use area, which has picnic tables, shade, nearby restroom, and parking for single vehicle vessels, single vehicle parking. This is the restroom nearest the day use area, located by the existing accessible day use parking. It is a vault restroom and it is accessible. The picnic and day use area where the project is proposed to be installed does not meet accessibility requirements and only have a handful of single vehicle parking. The Forest Service currently charges a $5 day use fee and does not charge a boating fee. There is no accessible path of travel from the parking and restroom to the day use area, and no accessible path of travel from the day use to the water. Currently, an embankment with roots, logs, brush, and uneven terrains makes access to the water from the day use challenging. The embankment towards the left is less challenging, but is smaller in size and has lots of aquatic vegetation for boaters to navigate through. This is the proposed concept design. We're proposing to fund the engineering, permitting, and construction of the project. If you follow me on the slide, starting at the bottom red line, we're proposed to install a 50-foot long by 8-foot wide low freeboard boarding floats attached to an abutment and then the blue wiggly line going up is an accessible path of travel to the yellow dotted rectangular, which is a loading and unloading zone, with two of the white rectangles are two single vehicle parking, and then the dotted red line going it's a path going up to additional parking. So the Forest Service agrees to convert campsite 19 for additional parking for a total of 12 single vehicle with one accessible, which is indicated in the blue rectangle box on the right, on the top right, the top left, sorry. And project signage will be installed as well. And the total estimated project cost is $525,000. The table includes a 10% construction contingency reserved for any unforeseen issues that may occur during construction. We estimate that 2,000 normalized boaters would benefit from the improvements annually, and 40,000 normalized boaters would benefit from the 20-year life of this project. And DBW analysis established that a benefit-cost ratio exceeding 1 is worthy of consideration from a financial perspective. And for this project, the benefit-cost ratio is a 1.23. And DBW recommends we include conditions to the WCI contract for the Forest Service to abandon campsite 19 to create 5 additional day-use boater parking, and to have signage reserving all 13 proposed day-use parking spaces for recreational boater only. At this time, DBW seeks the Commission's advice comment on this proposed $525,000 waterway connection initiative funding with conditions to the Forest Service for the Fish Lake non-motorized boat launching facility improvements as described in the August 7, 2025 feasibility report. This concludes my presentation. My contact information is provided on the slide. Chairman Pair, are there any questions?
Well, I think we now move to public comment. Do we have any in-person public comment?
We do not. Okay. And as a reminder for this agenda item, click the participants button to use the raise hand feature in Zoom. And if you're calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. The only public comments that we can receive virtually must be through the Zoom environment, and our technical team has been working with Kate Thompson to get her comment. Unfortunately, that hasn't been possible yet or successful, and I see no virtual hands raised at this time.
Okay, so no public comments heard on this matter, which is item 10. I should have mentioned that earlier. So that said, do any of my fellow commissioners have any comments on the project? Okay, Mr. Commissioner Gonzalez, please. Vice Chair Gonzalez. Go ahead.
Appreciate that, Chair. Thank you. Couple of things. So one is, again, big thank you, appreciation to all the Forest Service staff that welcomed us to the site and kind of like allowed us to really kind of see not just the current status, but what it was kind of what it can look like and who it's going to benefit. That was incredibly helpful. On one note, you mentioned kind of like this, the funding for this is through the Waterways Connection initiative. And I think it's helpful to have that reminder that is that was a one-time allocation that parks received, and of that, Boating on Waterways received this portion. So this is being funded for that, and it was helpful that to have that information in the prep packet. I think really helpful in that context, as well as think that to stress that note, which was visible during our site visit. We're using the term here, which is I know it's a policy term in terms of disadvantaged community, but I think what we're getting at is the value and benefit of the site isn't just the geography, of course, it's socioeconomic status. It is right next to serving reservations, and that is specifically, my understanding, is to be ADA accessible. So I'm trying to think, like, how much more benefit can you get than that? My two quick questions on that is, one, is this is not the last of the waterway connections initiatives project, right? You have, this is covered, and then maybe at least one more?
I believe we have another one in November to go down to San Diego.
Perfect. And then my quick question, is there any sense of, if approved, like what's a rough anticipated kind of timeline in terms of kind of how the project would be completed?
For this project?
Yeah, for this project.
Right. So the Forest Service would, once the contract's executed, the Forest Service would begin looking either to develop engineering designs in-house or contract out. So that could take anywhere from a year or 2 years. And then once we get, since this project is pretty straightforward, it's just, you know, accessible path, parking, and floats. So it might be a little quicker than standard projects. We're hoping to possibly get to construction, I would say, 2027 or earlier.
Perfect. That helps. Thank you.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, first of all, thank you for your presentation and for affording us the tour yesterday. It was really interesting to be out there, and it's a beautiful location once you arrive there. I wanted to just, nothing implied by that choice of words. I just wanted to discuss this assumption of 2,000 non-motorized boaters, and I'm curious how you think of that. Do you think of that as sort of a baseline estimate? And, you know, it sounded like when we were out there yesterday that visitation could go significantly higher. At the same time, of course, in a location like this, I accept you probably want to be conservative in your assumptions.
Right. We usually try to be conservative in our projections and see if we have only this amount of would it be still be, you know, perspective-wise to fund the project, would this still be worthwhile? So we don't want to overestimate, of course.
Yeah, and on the 20-year lifespan of the improvements, that seems overly conservative to me. What is that based on?
That's our standard contract, okay. Length of our contracts for the grants.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I'm just going to, you know, I'll recognize other commissioners, but I just, on that issue of, because that this was my concern yesterday, and I asked one of the rangers in attendance to get us some past numbers on usage of the facility, or I should say, you know, the area. And it was my understanding from yesterday, it's really only a three-month window where the campground is open. And so did we get any better sense of prior usage in years past on that?
Kippy, which one?
Either through, like, you know, receipts of fees or however it might have been done.
I invite Kip from Forest Service.
Yeah, so we analyzed our information from recreation.gov, which is our online reservable side of things. Half our campsites are reservable online, and we also counted the records from fee envelopes, and based on those numbers and also some of the assumptions of users who perhaps aren't necessarily paying to be there, we came up with roughly 2,000 to 2,500 visitors on an annual basis that we expect that we've had up there, depending on fire seasons and other things that have impacted visitation.
Okay, great, thank you. Anyone else? Please, Commissioner Rosales.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation and the tour. I do plan on going there and checking it out, as I will be driving through Willow Creek back home. As a ADA advocate, just some recommendations that I have as I've been thinking about it is, you know, you had mentioned during the tour of repainting the handicap sign. My recommendation would be relocating that handicap location closer to the restroom and to the path. Just to reduce the amount of walking someone would need to do from that part, location that's already been cited, if that is possible. And then also including an additional handicap parking spot right next to the other one, and for that reason is when you mark it in the center between the two parking two spots, you discourage drivers or other drivers from parking in that location. And my recommendation is thinking about van usage for these handicap spots, and then also considering if they're a wheelchair user and they're a driver, the limitations of another vehicle parking right next to them and very closely reduces the chance of them actually staying and recreating. So reducing those barriers increases the chances of more visitation for folks with disabilities and that need that access. And then, yes, two accessible parking spaces can just, you know, reduce impact to those that are visiting. So that's my recommendation, is to look at the entire area and see what's the most viable place to put two ADA parking spots. And, you know, usually it's just one for every 25, but because if you want to increase access to places like this, I would recommend two. Thank you.
Anyone else? Well, oh, please, Commissioner Hallahan.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure, and I have really noted that wherever it seems that something is changing and growing for the better, some individuals have worked very hard over a long period of time to keep it going, handing it off sometimes even as a baton. So I want to thank everyone with the NPS that worked on this, Fish and Game, all the different departments, and appreciate it. I have a question about this fund. So it's a $154 million Water Connect. And do you happen to know what percentage of it this commission is helping decide where those funds are going? Like maybe 10%?
Let me invite Karen to come up here and speak to that.
Good morning, commissioners. Kieran Dale, Chief of Grants and Loans for the Division of Boating and Waterways. State Parks was the overall decider of how much Boating and Waterways received of the Waterways Connections Initiative, and that was $10 million. And then the Division of Boating and Waterways is responsible for allocating those funds. And the mechanism for doing that was through our normal grant process. So projects that we could fund through Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund as part of our Boat Launching Facility Grant Program, we would fund through that. Ones that aligned with Waterways Connections Initiative priorities, we chose to fund through that mechanism. So we're using Waterways Connections Initiative money rather than Harbors and Watercraft Revolving money for those projects.
The reason I'm asking is because a couple years ago I asked people to go on and the non-motorized canoe at that point wasn't operational. They weren't taking grant applications. Mm-hmm. So how did these grants come to us if that door wasn't open on the site? Did we reopen it and create another space for people to apply for non-motorized water connection funds?
Yeah, every February we hold a grant cycle for both motorized and non-motorized. So we haven't stopped the application cycles. Just some years there's funding for it and some years there isn't. So we receive applications and then we request funding through the state process. And sometimes we receive it and sometimes we don't, but we continue to ask.
I see. So even if the site or something says there won't be funding this year, people are still applying and you're still taking applications.
Correct.
I see. Thank you.
Anyone else? Oh, please. Super quick comment. Yep, Commissioner Gonzalez.
Super quick comment, not for Karen, so you're good. Just that since it's public record, I want to really restate thank you to Forest Service staff. I'm really grateful for all the work that you do. A lot of the work that you do that's unseen, as well as the work that is seen. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for that.
Well, I'm just going to add my 2 cents worth, because I, frankly, I have kind of mixed emotions about the project. My heart really loves it because I can see how it's going to serve disadvantaged people or perhaps people who don't have recreational activities nearby there. Although up in Humboldt, I kind of find that a little hard to believe because, you know, you've got all your rivers and everything like that. And so that said, my head is kind of a little troubled by it because as much as I love the great outdoors, the lake seems very troubled and it seems like it's kind of in a, you know, you're kind of, it's a Sisyphean task trying to clear all those invasive species out of there. And I appreciate the hard work that people do to make that happen. But I mean, this is just going to be an ongoing problem. And that, and I understand the usage that we've had reported today, 2,250 people and projected future, that's kind of right on the margins of what, you know, of what is considered return on investment. As you say, it's 1.25, and anything over one is considered good. Although I don't understand how you quantify the usage, right? I see how you can qualify the expense, but the usage seems somewhat abstract to me. So that kind of concerns me, and I won't show my hand, but the other thing that I jokingly talked to my fellow commissioners on the van on the way up, and we had further conversation about it. If something is to, it seems to me that it is an extraordinarily remote area with no connection, cell phone connection. And if someone, an elderly person or, you know, someone with a heart condition or something has an encounter there, I mean, that's extraordinarily problematic, right? You can't communicate. It's a good half an hour back down to where you could get cell phone coverage. So, you know, maybe the Park Service gives thought to that outside and apart from this grant, how we can sort of get some kind of public safety, you know, maybe Starlink or something like that. So at least people can, if an incident does occur and whenever you're around water, they seem to occur, or maybe just even having a defibrillator there. I know that it's very rural and it's very pretty rough. There's no electricity or anything. So, you know, I think there's a real, I would have a real public safety concern surrounding that. But like I say, that's probably outside the scope of this grant. So I guess my concerns are really just, it's kind of bang for buck, right? You know, we're going to, you know, really just probably a whole not a lot of users. But then again, you know, the people who love it probably love it. And I haven't really heard anything about if these are what they call discrete visitors or if it's the same family going up there every weekend. And so now the $500,000 is really only benefiting, you know, half a dozen families that go up there, which is great, you know, but we have to kind of balance this with other people and other grants that might be funded. So those are my concerns. I had some more concerns that I guess I won't waste everyone's time with. But anyways, okay, so that said, we had no public comment on this. So at this point, if there's nothing else heard from the commissioners, we have one more, Commissioner Hallahan.
I went out and saw the site visit where the internet cable is coming in over with Samoa area last night, and I checked in online that the cable is for the internet that will hyper connect cell phone throughout this coastal area and the mountain area of Northern California is imminent. Like, it is being created and built. So when the rangers were saying they think in 3 to 6 months that they'll have cell phone, high-speed internet and cell phone in that area, it's real, it's serious, and I've seen it. And I think that really weighed me because I'm a mariner and there's a lot of dead zones out there and things aren't safe sometimes. So I agree that having service is really important. I really liked the idea that as a mom, going to places where you have tweens that could be really safe and they could go boating and run back and forth from camp is really nice. So the seclusion is desirable. Also, it's close to native reservations with youth that aren't getting enough access to being on the water and learning how to put life jackets on. So if there was a life jacket loader program, which they said that they were talking about and going to work on, and I do think that the weeds, there has to be an action plan that isn't just volunteers going out there grabbing it, but either the Conservation Corps or something more focused to help really take care of that, because we're making an investment in the area, and I think those weeds could be taken down more annually. Anyway, I appreciated everyone's honesty yesterday about the program. Thank you.
I was remiss in not giving accolades to the hard work that everyone in this room put into the project, because having driven up there once, I can tell you that, you know, three site visits is, you know, a lot of work, and also that I understand that the forestry people here have also put a lot of work into the project. And I didn't mean to in any way not recognize the hard work that everyone's put into this project. So unless I hear anything further, I will entertain a motion for the grant for the Fish Lake Non-Motorized Boat Launch Facility Project.
I would like to move for motion.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. With that, can we please have the clerk take a roll for the vote?
Yeah, a motion has been made and seconded for the commission to recommend that the division approve funding for the Fish Lake Non-Motorized Boat Launching Facility Grant Project. Commissioners, please indicate your vote when I call your name. Commissioner Hawkins?
Aye.
Commissioner Hawkins votes aye. Commissioner Hallahan?
Aye.
Commissioner Hallahan votes aye. Commissioner Rosales?
Aye.
Commissioner Rosales votes aye. Commissioner Medina?
Aye.
Commissioner Medina votes aye. Commissioner Edsader?
Aye.
Commissioner Edsader votes aye. Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez votes aye. Chair Peer?
Aye.
Chair Peer votes aye. The vote is 7 in favor and 0 opposed. The motion is carried and the project is approved.
Thank you. Thank you, Commission.
I had to keep it interesting. Okay, that said, we will move on to item number 12, which is a division program update, and the presenter will be Deborah Holmes on the Aquatic Center Grant Program.
I think my slides are going to be coming up from AGP. Great. Thank you. Good morning, commissioners and guests. My name is Deborah Holmes. I'm the DBW Grants and Loans Unit Manager. And today I'm presenting an update on our Aquatic Center Grant Program on behalf of Amy Rigby, who is the program manager, but was not able to be here today. Slide, please. DBW receives funding for this program from the U.S. Coast Guard through the Recreational Boating Safety Grant, which is funded by the Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund. As the pass-through entity for this funding, DBW is required to follow federal and Coast Guard goals when granting these funds to aquatic centers. The Coast Guard's goal for this program is to reduce boating injuries and fatalities. To best achieve this goal, DBW requires that our grant applicants identify boating accidents and safety issues that are specific to their area and to demonstrate how their courses are designed to reduce those issues. Courses funded by this program will teach rules of the road, on the water skills development, and proper use of safety equipment. Slide, please. Eligible applicants must be one of the following: a college or university, a public agency, or a nonprofit organization that has 501c3 status. Agencies must meet each of the requirements to be eligible for funding that are listed here. Requirements are to have an existing boating safety education program, to provide on-the-water boating safety education, to teach boating safety skills, particularly how to operate a boat in the waterways and conditions that students are likely to experience in their region. And lastly, the centers must require that life jackets be worn when anyone is on or near the water at their location. The funding is designed to augment but not fully support successful aquatic center programs. Slide, please. Just a couple of other notes regarding eligibility. Today, the meeting is being held at the Cal Poly Humboldt Aquatic Center. And the one that was held last February at Sacramento State University Center, both of these are showcasing aquatic center programs with a good-sized facility. But many of the programs that we fund have small footprints. They rent space from other entities or are completely mobile, operating out of trailers or shipping containers. A program does not have to have an actual facility to receive funding. On the slide is the Tahoe City Public Utility District program. They rent space from a local marina, assemble their modular dock for the season, and when the season ends, the dock is disassembled and stored in a container along with their boats at a different location. In addition to items such as boats, trailers, and engines, these grants can fund modular docking, mooring buoys, and storage containers, all of which will allow an on-the-water program to be effective, even with limited space and funding. Slide, please. Educational courses for any activity that meets the definition of recreational boating can qualify for funding. This includes on-the-water activities such as paddle sports, to include whitewater rafting, canoeing, kayaking, stand-up paddleboard, and beginning rowing if life jackets are worn. Power boating includes open motorboat, tow sports, and personal watercraft. And then sailing sports include sailing, windsurfing, and kite surfing. Applicants can apply for funding in four different categories: equipment related to teaching on the water courses for students and instructors, which includes boats, engines, trailers, non-permanent storage and docking, boat parts such as sails, and other boating safety related supplies like life jackets, wetsuits, and radios. Scholarships can be granted to assist participants for attending the boating education courses. Scholarship funding can also be used to transport the transportation costs to get course participants to a program site. Instructor training funds can be awarded for program instructors to complete boating safety instruction trainings. And lastly, each year, an additional $2,000 is available to offset the cost of hosting at least one boating safety event. Often these events will coincide with National Safe Boating Week in May, but some also just coincide with an aquatic center's opening day or another local event. Slide, please. There are some restrictions for use of this funding. The program will not fund permanent structures, but as mentioned previously, items such as storage sheds or modular removable docking and other items such as Moby mats that help transport equipment or wheelchairs across sand can be purchased with the grant. And additionally, per the Coast Guard rules, use of equipment that is purchased with the grant for competition is limited to 10% of the overall use, and the same for equipment purchased with the grant on rentals, which is limited to 40% of overall program use. Slide, please. Here are some statistics from the fiscal year 24-25, which was our last funding cycle. DBW was allocated $1.465 million in funding to award for that year. That was a 21% increase from our previous year's award of $1.215 million. We received requests for $1.7 million worth of funding from 46 different applicants. We awarded the entire $1.456 million to 39 of those applicants. The average award was $37,500. The applicants who served less than 1,200 students in the year prior were eligible for up to $42,000 total, and applicants who served more than 1,200 students in the year prior were eligible for a total of $62,000. During the last federal fiscal year, which ran from October 1 of 23 to September 30 of 24, 72,000 students were trained in boating classes through the DBW funded program. And 33% of the students that took boating safety courses at these aquatic centers were from underserved areas or populations. Next slide, please. Events play an instrumental role at the aquatic centers, and many grantees offer boating safety events throughout the year. During the last federal fiscal year, these events, some of which are supported with grant funding, reached over 200,000 people with safety messaging. Events are advertised and open to the general public and generally take place at the aquatic center or other programming location. They offer on-the-water boating safety experiences, and they also offer life jacket trade-ins, giveaways, and fitting demonstrations. The other events can offer boating safety literature, boater card information, and muscle prevention information. Many of the events occur during National Safe Boating Week in May, but also can be another part of a local event. Some of them are held in off-water locations, such as on-campus orientation or community events, which allow them to reach additional audiences. Some of the examples which are pictured here on the slide, one is a family night at the Sac State Aquatic Center, where parents come on Thursday evening of a week-long summer camp, and their kids show them what they have learned by taking their parents out on boats. Another is a Build-A-Boat, is an event offered by the Dana Point Youth Foundation. People often unexpectedly find themselves learning about buoyancy, the importance of life jackets, and having to paddle their self-constructed boat. Lastly, during the City of Reading's Halloween event, participants paddle kayaks through an on-the-water haunted house that is set up in their pool. This allows the city to promote not only life jacket safety and other water safety messages, but also to advertise their ongoing camps and classes to a wider audience in need of safety education. Next slide, please. Our grantees also will utilize DBW-created boating safety materials in their courses. One of the popular publications is the AquaSmart series. Aquatic Center students complete the workbook and learn lessons such as how to float and how to properly fit and wear a life jacket. Next slide, please. The grantees also help DBW promote safety messages from our multimedia campaign at their events. Here you can see a booth that is advertising both the boater card and the Live to Ride life jacket message. Next slide, please. Grantees also assist DBW with clean and green activities and teach students how to reduce boater impacts on the environment. On Coastal Cleanup Day in the fall of 2024, our aquatic centers engaged students who removed 20,000 pounds of trash and 1,700 pounds of recyclables. Next slide, please. Here are some examples of how aquatic centers are creatively engaging a wide range of participants in their courses. The photo on the top left shows a paraplegic using a rolling dock, making it much easier for him to get on the water. On the top right, the photo shows teenagers learning to get to the aquatic center using public transportation so they can come regularly. On the bottom, from the left, the first photo is two families randomly assigned to the same boat on an introductory sailing class. The girls ultimately became best friends and continue boating together regularly. In the middle, we see participants in a boating class targeted at seniors, even though many think they are too old or lack the strength to learn to kayak, they are surprised that it is very easy for them to do. And lastly, on the bottom right, is a group of former gang members from Homeboy Industries who are now using their time learning to sail. Next slide. Thank you. So this slide covers some of our recent program updates, which include we currently are updating the Aquatic Center Grant Program webpage to make it more user-friendly and to also include information that will assist new applicants with understanding program requirements and the application process. One of the improvements is a list we created that is up there now of first steps that prospective applicants or additional steps that unsuccessful applicants can take to improve their chances of getting funding in a subsequent year. We also continue to fine-tune the grant application to ensure that funding awarded supports grant activities that are in line with the Coast Guard's funding objectives. Upcoming highlights for the 25-26 year include the application in opening around September 15th for 6 weeks through October 23rd. We anticipate having $1.4 million to award in this cycle. Additionally, the Aquatic Center Director's annual meeting for this year is going to be held on October 1 and 2 in South Lake Tahoe. Usually this meeting is split up in regions. We do a Northern California and a Southern California, but this year our host in Tahoe has room for a larger group, and so it's going to combine the Southern California region. Everybody will come together this year, and it'll give our grantees a chance to connect with their counterparts from around the state. These meetings are a great way for Aquatic Center center staff to receive information and assistance from DBW and to network with each other, exploring new ideas and solutions for unique challenges. The meetings are open to the public, and prospective grantees are always encouraged to attend. Last slide, please. Up on the screen here is Amy Rigby's program manager contact information. If anyone would like to reach out to her to get more information about her program. But right now, I can take questions.
Okay, so I believe now we ask for if there's any public comment on this matter. Do we have any cards?
I have no green comment cards, and I do not see any raised hands over Zoom virtually or by phone.
Okay, so there's no public comments on the matter. And so then I'll ask my fellow commissioners if they have any comments. Vice Chair Gonzalez, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deborah. It's always a treat to see Homeboy Industries doing all kinds of outdoorsy stuff. It was great to see them on there. Two questions. One of the kind of eligible entities is like a community-based nonprofit, kind of 501c3 status, I think, as you noted. Do you have a rough idea of kind of what's the mix of awardees? Like if you were to do a rough percentage comparing colleges, universities to like cities, municipals, and like nonprofits?
I would say it's probably almost half. I didn't do the math, but there's a pretty even mix of we usually do about 40 awards a year, and I would say they're the nonprofits, they make up a good portion. So I would guess almost half.
Awesome. That's great to
hear.
If
you wanted actual numbers, we could get that to you.
I can reach out to Rick. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. No, I ask because I know probably because universities tend to have amazing sites like these, we get to see the university programs, but it's a helpful reminder to see how many community nonprofits also benefit from this. And then my second question was, apologies if you said it and it just didn't sink in my brain. In the program updates, you're mentioning kind of continuing to revise the grant application and scoring matrix. Have there been any elements in the scoring matrix that you've just have needed to say, we need to relook at this differently, or new information, or kind of participant feedback? I'm just curious what some of those revisions might consider.
I think of the last revisions that we did from last year going into this year, the main one was on scoring the instructor training requests. We didn't have enough questions for that objective to be weighted accurately. You know, so like when you're scoring an application and there's only two questions in the section, it makes it a lot more difficult. And so we added some questions for instructor training, and that did cause us to shift some of the scoring around. But we haven't done anything that like is substantively revised. It's sort of just shifting, and maybe we reworded some questions as well to get more direct responses. We were getting answers that were kind of all over the place, so we fine-tuned for that to kind of get people to focus on exactly what we're wanting to hear from them.
Perfect. And my last piece on that one, so that in that case, if you're revising something like the application or the scoring matrix, that's something you're able to do in-house, so to speak, right? It's like falls within your administrative ability to do that. You don't need to like go to a policy or statutory language that you can't touch.
Right, that's correct. For this application, we do have the authority to do those revisions. And whenever we make changes, the scoring and the sample application, they're uploaded to our website, so they're available for the public.
Right. That's it. Review. Thank you, and glad to hear the federal mm-hmm. funding for this came through.
Right, yes.
Anything further, commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Hallahan.
When you said about, thank you so much for all your great work, and of course I see it all over the state, so thank you, and I know a lot of youth benefit from this, and I'm sure the statistics of that are pretty high. When I was in the Sacramento Aquatic Center, they said that what they did is they set up their aquatic center as an NGO. It's a nonprofit, though it's connected to Sac State. So would you consider that a college or consider that a nonprofit?
That's actually true, because it's like the Sacramento State Associated Students Foundation. And I think a couple of our other university grantees, they do run those grants through their foundations. That makes it a lot easier. There's less bureaucracy. It would depend on how you want the numbers. I wouldn't count them. To me, they're listed as a university. We count those as a university. And if I was going to get you numbers, we don't use these numbers anywhere, but if I was going to get them for you, I would break that out for you mm-hmm. and show you the true, like the, you know, boots on the ground, the little grassroots, like, you know, the sailing center in Berkeley, you know.
Where they might have mostly volunteers and not really any staff. That's kind of
right,
like
or where
NGO.
They were founded from to serve a specific purpose like that, not an offset from a university.
Mm-hmm. And how many large aquatic centers are there in the state that are like the one we're at here in Humboldt? Are we at one of the aquatic centers that California Boating and Waterways helped start? Yeah.
Yes. So the. You are at one of the, we call them the Boating Safety Instruction Centers. There are five in the state that DBW built.
Where are they? Which ones are they?
Humboldt's one. Sacramento's one. Channel Islands has one. There's one in San Diego, Crown Cove at Southwestern College. And there's one more. There are Crown Cove, Cal Poly.
Castaic.
Castaic, exactly. There's one at Castaic with Northridge. Thanks, Ramona.
I'm sorry, I don't, Cal State?
Castaic Lake.
Oh.
In LA. Mm-hmm.
And those came in somewhere between like the 80s and the 90s?
Early 2000s.
And they had the same kind of application program. It's not going to happen again, but you had a...
It will not happen again. Yes, it was a capital outlay when the division was its own department.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. That's it for me. Thank you.
Different process. Yeah.
Anything further from other commissioners? Okay, nothing heard. So thank you, Ms. Holmes, for your presentation. And we'll move on to the administrative items. Madam Clerk, are you going to read these, or do you want me to just read them? What would you prefer? Okay, so first is just a reminder to commissioners of the upcoming 2025 meeting date. So the quarter four, Q4 meeting will transpire on November 12th and 13th in 2025, and it'll be in San Diego County. That read, we'll move on to our last and, well, not our last, our what do they call it, penultimate agenda item, which is item number 16. Which are any suggested agenda items for our next meeting? Please.
Hi. So last November, Chair Peer and I started a ad hoc advisory economic impact report for California Boating. Since there hadn't been one since 1997, and we have done work on that, and I'd like to put it on the agenda for our next meeting. And I also would like, I don't know if it's at all possible, but I'm wondering, we had a workshop in February that was a one-day workshop, but only four of these commissioners were there. And two were brand new, and so they were just getting onboarded. In fact, hadn't even completed all the onboarding. And I really enjoyed that workshop a lot. And I would love if there was any possibility, maybe in the next meeting, if we were doing tours in the morning, maybe we could have an afternoon, like, you know, time to speak with the public there so that all the commissioners can be there and learn more about the full, like, summary of all the objectives of California Boating and Waterways. Anyways, just a suggestion. I'm looking for more clarity and want to have more open space to talk, and maybe a workshop space would be, like, really wonderful to engage all our new commissioners and everyone with. So it's a request.
Anyone else? Okay, well, I would just like to, and I alluded to this in my opening comments, you know, there was a lot of people who put a lot of work, both industry people, stakeholders, members of the public, really representing all the elements. You heard Bo Biller discussing this earlier, who all participated in all of these. And that was in 2022. And we produce formal recommendations, probably about six pages worth. And Commissioner Hawkins was involved in that, former Chair Ehrman, and then I was as well. And I would suggest as an agenda item that we kind of produce a formal response to those recommendations. And I think there's probably a good 10 or so, but perhaps more. And not that we need to accept or reject the recommendations, but sort of get a better sense of what the status of the recommendations is. So, for example, in 2022, we recommended the economic impact report, and I've been hearing that ever since I've been on the commission. I just have no idea what has transpired, if anything has transpired. And I could tick through, six or seven other items, recommendations just off the top of my head, and it would just be nice to kind of tie that up, if for no other reason than as an appreciation for the work, because it was a full year of work. I had 5-6 meetings, and they were always well attended, for the people who put in that work, so the commission is being responsive. So that's my recommended agenda item to sort of summarize, if we could get like a formal, to the degree that it would be formal, but just maybe a staff presentation as we've seen here, on those recommendations. So unless I hear anything further, I guess we don't need, I can just, Chair, what's that?
Chair Pierre, I do have a couple comments. Please. So on the recommendations, we did do a workshop. I don't know that you were present, but we did kind of do exactly what you asked during that workshop, but we could probably put together a presentation at the formal meeting, if you like, just addressing what recommendations we pushed forward, what were deferred, which ones were as part of a BCP that didn't get pushed through. So we can put something together on that. But we did do that at a workshop that happened that Commissioner Hallahan mentioned. We went through that whole process and went through all of the recommendations and identified which ones that were completed and which are we moved forward and which ones are implemented and which ones that weren't. I also want to go back to Commissioner Hallahan's request on perhaps a workshop at the next meeting. So as you know, we are combining your public meeting with the Marine Recreation Association conference in San Diego. So we'll be there in, I think, Coronado. We do have a project that you all need to see. So the goal there, we'll be limited on time. So I guess I'm asking you all, I think the goal is to get you there, get you up to the project on one day, and then allow you to participate in the afternoon events with MRA in the afternoon. But if you prefer not to, then we potentially can look into having a workshop at the same time. So,
please.
That was a great workshop. The public was under attended. We just had Jerry Desmond, who was part of the coalition that came to that. And there were a couple other people that were confused and came to it by accident. So I think that, and there were only four commissioners, and of course it couldn't be recorded. So there also, when you were commenting on some of these agenda, on some of this coalition's requests, some of it you had counsel there, and some of it couldn't be spoken about because it was still in February, had to do with budgets, and there was still confidentiality happening at the time. So there were several things that were talked about as well. So it was, the letter was written to Armando, and I'm sorry, the California Parks Director, and I think there was a reason why the coalition and the commissioners wrote it, and so it would be nice to get like an official response, I think, and to read that off in an actual meeting.
So to clarify, there was the engagement process that you all participated, well, the commission participated in, some of you participated in, that you moved forward on recommendations to the division. So that's what we went through. And then are you referring to a letter that was provided to the department from the stakeholders? So that's kind of a separate.
Yeah, I don't know if that's.
They're identical, but it was, yes.
They're not identical, but I mean.
Okay, I thought that they were the same document, just one was given to the division and one was given to the director, but you're saying they're separate.
Yeah. So just to clarify exactly what's the commission's expectation from the division.
So, so for me, what the letter to the director of California Parks was unanswered. And so what I hear from the stakeholders is they would like to get a written response or a response from all that hard work. They poured it all together and they put all their names and logos and contact information and sent out a letter and CC'd it to the division, to you. So what I've heard is there's been a lack of response to a formal letter that was, you know, representing thousands and thousands of California boaters. And, of course, I wasn't a commissioner back then. I'm just hearing it from people when I go to a lot of yachting events.
Yeah, to Maggie's point, I think, you know, I wasn't able to, you know, attend the workshop, and maybe we can just have a public – my agenda item is to have a public airing of the responses to those recommendations. I'm not sure that you guys do what you want to do. I'm not sure we need a formal letter response to the letter that kind of got circulated, or who it was addressed to the governor, right? I believe, and then it was copied to, well, anyways, that's the version I saw.
So the division can definitely do a presentation, as you requested at the public meeting, on the recommendations that you all were part of, the right. Commission was part of, as far as the workshop, and we can, summarizing, you know, what we did at the workshop.
And I think what I'm really driving at in sort of that is, like, when we say we're engaging other agencies to help fund addressing invasive species in the Delta, you know, just kind of hang some meat on those bones, okay? Who are those other agencies, and what's the status of our interaction with them? Because I think that would help sort of address some of these kind of latent concerns that are, and I don't want to create work for staff because you guys do a heck of a lot of work, but I'd kind of like to get that move forward. Yes.
Again, within the context of future agenda items, so I'm getting at least that I feel it could be helpful for me as an understanding would be an update that, in some cases, I know probably reiterate some of what you shared before, but I think it's just a deal with any misconception that no action has been taken by the division, knowing sure. There have been actions. And then I think, as I mentioned before, what falls within the context of what the division has done, can do, and the commission, and then what are things that we might have an opinion on, but, right?
Well,
we don't speak for the governor, so.
Yeah, and you've raised this issue several times during the meeting, and I think your point is well taken. Some of these is outside of the ambit of the division, and it now rests at some form in the legislature, whatever that particular item might be. Like, I don't know what the form of the proposed registration fee increase is. I mean, I assume that's legislative, and, you know, who's carrying the legislation? You know, it's, you know what I'm talking about. And I just, like I said, I don't want to, like, bust anyone's pick, but I think it would, particularly for the new commission members, just to sort of get everyone on the same page. Yeah. Okay. Anything further? Please.
Should we vote on if people here would like to spend 2 or 3 hours in a workshop at that next meeting, or if we would prefer to be enjoying the conference? Like, should we talk?
Thank you.
Should we raise it?
We could have, I suppose, an informal. What are people's thoughts? I mean, I don't think we need to take a vote. I mean, I find the conference to be very informative because they do a lot of breakout groups, and I would be a little remiss to. So yeah, I didn't know that that's how it was stacked. That we're going to do the showing and then go to the
I share those sentiments as somebody with a marina industry background. I wouldn't want to take away time spent at the conference because of a workshop. That's not to say I don't want the workshop, but I think we should find a way to schedule it separately from the conference.
Commissioner Hallahan, I'm in agreement of the schedule time for the workshop, but I think the conference is valuable. I think the vice chair The way he articulated kind of what we're trying to get at here is important. So well done, Vice Chair. And so I think with that, we have enough to make a motion, right, or to request this agenda item on the next meeting.
Yeah, you don't need to make a motion. This is really just a discussion, excuse me, that informs staff, and I think Ramona has a response to what you're suggesting.
Yeah, so after your discussion, I mean, the option would be that we would have that workshop at your next meeting after the November meeting.
I'll raise another thought for people's considerations. We all could just show up on the Monday before, do it that afternoon, and then do so. It's sort of adding an additional day. No. Okay, that was a lead balloon. All right, forget it. Oh, is it?
Yeah, there is a lot of logistics to that. We are, yeah.
Gotcha.
We are coordinating
okay,
with MRA. Yeah.
Let's put it off till the next one then. Yeah. Okay. Great. All right. Are we any other thoughts from people on agenda items? Okay, nothing heard. I will adjourn this meeting without objection. Okay, the meeting is thereby adjourned.